Oh, say can we see by the one light in all our earth to embrace at the call of all nations where our children can play in a world without war where we stand hand in hand in the grace of creation where the rivers run clean through the forests of green where the cities stand tall in the clear skies of freedom. Oh, say do our hearts sing out for harmony and love forever on the planet of our birth, blessed with peace on Earth.
Hello and welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and you can hear us at accesssacramento.org, or you can go to Great Speeches and Interviews. blogspot.com, or you can friend this program at Facebook. Today's program includes David K. Johnson interview. Terrence McNally, journalist and radio host, interviews David K. Johnson, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and author. David K. Johnson worked as an investigative reporter for several newspapers. He's the author of two bestsellers, Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch. And then after that, Scott Horton interviews the other Scott Horton. The other Scott Horton discusses the protest letter signed by top U.S. legal scholars, including Obama's law professor at Harvard, about Bradley Manning's illegal and immoral conditions of detainment, how Manning is subjected to unnecessary security suicide prevention measures to punish and vilify him, and the U.S. refusal to allow a private meeting between Manning and the U.N. representative on torture.
What is up with taxes? I remember growing up, people joked about how much they hated taxes, but they paid them, and we had a solid middle-class society. Real wages rose from World War II through 1973. Today, one of our two major political parties, nationally and in state capitals, is unwilling to even consider raising taxes, no matter the circumstances. And though most of Washington's officials and media are hysterical about the deficit and willing to hurt anyone in an effort to reduce it, both parties voted in December to extend tax breaks for the wealthiest Americans for two more years. Friday's New York Times, Friday the 25th, featured this headline: GE strategies let it avoid taxes altogether. Despite profits of $14.2 billion, $5.1 billion from its operations in the U.S., General Electric did not have to pay any U.S. taxes last year. David Kochanowski reported, its extraordinary success is based on aggressive strategy that mixes fierce lobbying for tax breaks and innovative accounting that enables it to concentrate its profits offshore. GE is our nation's largest corporation, and its CEO, Jeffrey Immelt, recently replaced Paul Volcker as leader of President Obama's Economic Recovery Advisory Board, as its name was changed to the Council for Jobs and Competitiveness. I last interviewed today's guest, Pulitzer Prize-winning tax writer David K. Johnston, in January 2009, on the day of Barack Obama's inauguration. And we talked then about how we might make the most of the opportunity that was presented by the financial catastrophe. Did the bailout make sense? And what could we do that might be smarter, more efficient, more effective, that might work? And in that month, January 2009's Mother Jones, Johnston had written, We are at last at a turning point. We have a chance to end the socialism for the rich that put us into this hole. How? By, in effect, reverse engineering the debacle. Rewriting tax laws and financial regulations has been the principal vehicle for turning government into a subsidy system for the deep-pocketed and the well-motivated. It can work in reverse as well. We can start by eliminating some of the most spectacular tax giveaways and move on to a doable, efficient steps towards shoring up our biggest asset, not stocks, bonds, or houses, but people. Best of all, much of this won't cost a penny. In fact, it will raise billions for the big tasks ahead. David K. Johnston worked as an investigative reporter for several newspapers. He was with the Los Angeles Times here in L.A. from 1976 to 1988, and at the New York Times from 95 to 2008, where he won a Pulitzer for his innovative coverage of our tax system. He now teaches the tax, property, and regulatory law of the ancient world at Syracuse University College of Law and Whitman School of Management, and writes a column at tax.com. He's the author of two bestsellers, Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch. His next book, The Fine Print, will be published in 2011. Welcome again, David K. Johnston.
Well, thank you for having me, Terrence.
So I'm sure you didn't recall that, the auspicious or inauspicious moment of our last interview, but as I was doing research for this show, I noticed it. And if you'll allow me, before we focus on taxes, I'm going to set it up by actually some things that we said that day. So the first thing I want you to do is get ready for a broad reflection on these first 2 years of Obama.
Okay.
So that day I said, now it is up to us to demand the best of our president, our representatives, and ourselves. Due to the scale of our multiple calamities, we may finally be ready to make meaningful changes to the business as usual that has sapped us of our capacity to make the most of our collective moment on this earth. Let us pledge our commitment to participate in the difficult and demanding healing of our communities, our workplaces, our schools, our culture, our government, our environment, and our global society. We must be awake. We must be vigilant. We must be tireless. We must not settle. And I also read a quote from Rebecca Solnit. The coming era doesn't mean that anyone can quit being political. After all, Obama, who is merely impressive as an individual, is unstoppable as a phenomenon created out of the collected hopes and desires of the public, which must continue dreaming and prodding him forward to make the world we want to see. David K. Johnston, your response.
Well, I think that the last 2 years have demonstrated quite clearly to us that President Obama, like everybody else who gets a serious shot at being president, has to be someone acceptable to the establishment in this country, and in particular acceptable to Wall Street. And you'll notice in the last couple of years that while we continue to suffer from the serious, serious problems left by the previous administration's policies, the solutions and the actions of Mr. Obama have all been very focused on what Wall Street thinks are the solutions to these problems, not the economic problems, not what you and I or any of the audience might think are the real problems.
Exactly. It was sad to read that stuff and just go, oh, you know, because to me, Obama's first 2 years have made it, as you pointed out, all the clearer that in the current system, it doesn't seem to matter because they all actually represent their funders. And given Citizens United, that will, I'm afraid, become even more the case.
Yes. And, you know, Citizens United, if we can digress to that for just a second, is
sure.
An unbelievably important decision. I had my research assistants go back, and they're still working on this. They've been on it for weeks now. Gather everything they can find about the nature of corporations at the time of the founders. Because, you know, Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas in particular argue that they are originalists and that their view of the Constitution is based on what the framers intended and the original intent, not some amorphous modern idea, right?
Exactly.
Well, so under Citizens United, we have granted essentially political rights to corporations, which are not natural entities. Justice Rehnquist, not exactly a raging liberal, in 1977, in a case called Bilotti, warned that it was one thing to grant property rights to corporations to protect their property, which is what the Supreme Court did without hearing in the Santa Clara case in 1886 that created personhood for corporations. But he warned, you don't want to do this to political rights, because those belong exclusively to natural persons, i.e. human beings. So it turns out back at the beginning of the Republic, corporations were incredibly tightly controlled. They could exist for a very limited period of time for a specific purpose. They operated often only in a single state and were tightly regulated and controlled in every way you can imagine, as opposed to today where they do anything that they want to do and they do it all over the world. So if anything should make people cynical and disbelieving of Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas when they tell you that they follow the original intent of the Constitution, it is Citizens United. And Citizens United is to the expansion of corporate power what the Big Bang was to the creation of the universe. It is the whole universe.
Absolutely. I recall the corporation was at the, I think, was granted at the pleasure of the sovereign and in England. And, of course, in the United States, the sovereign is we the people.
Right. And over the years, we've extended this and extended this. At one time, New Jersey was the state of choice for corporations. It's now mostly Delaware. And corporations have figured out how to use the various state laws so that they earn all of their profits in states that don't tax them, notably Delaware, for a few of them Texas or Florida. And then they take all their expenses in the states where they make their profits. So what effectively happens to state-level government, and after all, state-level government, remember, is what educates people.
That's right.
It's what operates, actually operates the healthcare system, doesn't so much finance it. That's done more in Washington, but there's a lot of it done at the state and local level. It runs the criminal justice system and provides most of the things that we need in our daily lives, everything from regulation of lawyers, inadequate as that may be, and I'm not a lawyer, and doctors, to running state parks and roads. And what the large corporations in America figured out how to do is to get all the benefits of this system and bear very little of the cost by exploiting differences among the states.
Yeah, and let me just point out, though, as David was saying those benefits, it sounded like those are the benefits to us, the individual citizens who live in these houses with our wives and children and so on. But those benefits, infrastructure, health care, a legal system, are absolutely essential for a corporation to function as well.
Yes, and corporations, of course, in many ways are the beneficiaries of that system. We have a whole variety of laws that have been set up that essentially give corporations significant advantages over ordinary folks.
And so now, one thing I do sometimes, and I thought this might be a show where it works, David, although I have many specifics that I will want to get to, I want to frame it in three big questions. One is, how is the tax system broken? What's the evidence? You know, how can we look and say, clearly, that's broken? Second, how did it get broken? What's the history? What are the causes? And then finally, how do we fix it? What are the solutions? So the first big question, what's the evidence that the tax system in the U.S. is broken?
Well, tax revenues have been falling even as the population and the economy expands. At tax.com, I have a new column that went up March 28th in response to a criticism of an earlier column. And even if you pick the year 2001 as the year you're going to start comparing, that was, after all, the first year of the Bush tax cuts, and a recession year, per capita income taxes in this country have fallen 32% to 2010. 32%. The total amount of money collected in the individual income tax has fallen 27% when the population grew by 8%.
Oh, my God.
Now, on the corporate side, the corporate income tax is almost flat. It went from $187 billion in 2001 to $191 in 2010. This is all adjusted for inflation to $2010 dollars. So it grew a little bit, 3%. But corporate profits had grown in real terms about 25% during that time. And per capita, that is, let's look at how much the corporate income tax is per American, it fell 5%. So without question, we live in a world that is becoming much more complicated and in which knowledge is the most important driver of economic growth. And yet, what are we doing? The state of New York just announced they're going to cut $800 million from spending on schools, on educating young people, which is really a choice to say, I want to save a few tax dollars today and not collect huge amounts of tax dollars in the future because the population will not be as well educated and won't make as much money.
And as you say, that is following the election of a Cuomo from one of America's progressive families and so on. And the New York Times in its editorial on March 20th said, Governor Cuomo has vowed to make the tough decisions and not be swayed by special interest pleadings, but he's refusing to impose any new taxes or even continue a current surcharge on New York's wealthiest and least vulnerable citizens.
Right. And by the way, in New York, you know, where we have these enormous fortunes that are made in Manhattan, has a state tax rate now at the top, which is half what it was a generation ago, half. It's been cut from 15% to about 7%. And the highest rate cuts in at $500,000. So that means that people who make $500,000 a year pay the same tax rate as people who make $500,000 a day. And there are lots of them in New York.
Oh, my God. And so that's what he's unwilling to touch while he's making
right.
all these cuts.
Because apparently he's afraid they'll all move to New Jersey. And we all know what New Yorkers think of New Jersey. If you don't, there's the famous Steinberg.
Oh, right.
Cover.
Of New Yorker magazine.
In the New Yorker magazine, you know, there's once you cross the Hudson River, it's all just nothingness.
Until you get to California.
Yes.
That's right.
Although I have in my house from my L.A. days the opposite one drawn from Hollywood Boulevard.
But it's still the same. There's nothing in between.
Right.
So the evidence that it's broken is that we now take in less taxes and grumble about it more. And face deficits for which it seems across the board most people's solution is only to make cuts. And if you'll allow me, just for the sake of information and again to sort of set this up, independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont has introduced legislation which would impose a 5% surtax on households earning $1 million or more. And in his announcement, he lays out some of the cuts in the Republican House budget bill H.R. 1, because his guess, and mine as well, is that people don't know what it actually looks like. Jerry Brown, as you know, in California, is trying to do the same sort of thing, sort of laying out this is how bad it would be if you don't allow us to raise some taxes. And we'll see how that goes. The Republicans at this point aren't even willing to allow it to go on the ballot. But these are just some of the cuts in Republican House passed budget bill. This has already been passed, H.R. 1.
So, you know, let me go back to you.
Yeah.
The big question. What
yeah.
is the evidence that the system is broken?
Right.
Now, one of the things you will hear that's spread all over the place is the top 1% pay half the taxes or 40% of the taxes. It's not true. There is something that's true, but it's very important to understand why this is not true. The federal individual income tax is about one of every $5 of all taxes raised in America. Remember, we have federal taxes, state taxes, local taxes.
And payroll taxes.
That's right. And I am ignoring now in this all the things that used to be covered by taxes that are now paid by fees. You don't have to be very old to know that we didn't used to have all these taxes imposed on every time. If you take a trip with a plane, you go three different planes, you have to pay three different fees for using the airport. And you pay a surcharge if you rent a car that's a tax, and all of these other things that are fees that are loaded onto you. College, when I was a young man and poor in California, college was free. Now, going to college is signing up for 20 years of debt for most people.
Right, which I mean, if people aren't thinking about that, just think, if you're of my generation or your generation, David, We came out maybe with some debt. I came out with a little bit of debt. But nowadays, people, by the time they graduate from college, rather than being able to take chances, be creative, and this goes exactly to what you were saying before about where is the future based in knowledge and based in people, not only are we making it harder for them to get that education, but we're making it harder for them to be creative once they get out because they come out loaded with debt.
Correct. So here's what's happened. It's very important to understand this. It is true the top 1% are paying around 40% of the total income tax.
Yes.
They also have earned as much as 23% of the income in recent years. They earned 21% of the income in 2008, the last year we have full data.
And what percent is that? Is that the top 1%.
21% of the income and paid about 40% of the income tax. But remember, you know, no one pays income tax, including the very rich, on your first about $9,300 if you're single, $17,000 if you're a married couple, a heterosexual married couple. So, because we exempt incomes at the bottom. If you tax those, you're just raising the price of everything, a point Adam Smith taught 230 years ago. So, while the income tax burden has gone to the top, you also need to recognize what's happened to incomes in America. The bottom 90% of Americans in 2008 earned a dollar and a penny on average for every dollar they earned in 1980. 28 years later, average income was up 1%, $300 and change for the year, dollar a day more per year. But at the top tenth of 1%, and by the way, that's where most of the income in the top 1% is, more than half of it goes to the top tenth of 1%, one in 1,000 families in America. That group saw their income for each dollar 1980 grow by 2028 to more than $4.
Per dollar of taxes.
Per dollar of income. So per dollar they made on average in 1980, adjusted for inflation in the year 2008.
Oh, I see, right.
$4, but for the vast majority, the bottom 90%, for every dollar they made in 1980, they were only making a dollar and a penny.
Got it.
And so, yes, of course, the share of income taxes paid by people at the top has gone up because their income has gone up vastly faster.
That's right.
And their rates have been cut. I did an analysis of 1961 incomes because there's certain statistical reason we were able to do an analysis that otherwise you couldn't do, comparing 1961 to 2007. The bottom 90% after all taxes, higher income taxes, higher Social Security taxes, was making just a little bit more than they made back in 1961. They made 20 cents more. For each dollar they made $1.20 after almost a half a century. The group at the top got $36.50 after tax for
each
dollar they made in 1961. That's 180 times as much growth.
Wow.
Now, that top group is the top 400 taxpayers, by the way. It's a smaller
group. Okay.
But these are people who make about $1 million a day in the last few years. And so, you know, what we've done under Reaganism is we have redistributed income through a whole variety of means, suppressed unions, reduced taxes at the top, provided tax deferrals to people at the top, encouraged owners of businesses to withdraw capital, which means destroying jobs from their businesses for their pleasure so they can own, you know, expensive paintings and, what was it, John McCain couldn't remember if he and his wife had 7 homes or 9 of them.
Right.
Recall. And the result has been this explosion of incomes at the top and an absolute flattening of incomes for the bottom 90%. And by the way, if you get into the bottom half, incomes are falling. People are making less now than they did 30 and 50 years ago when you adjust for inflation.
The parents of war. Do you hear all the soldiers in grief? Lost their brothers in battles so brief. The silence of arms has hasn't kept them from harm. Do you hear? City streets are no more. Do you hear all the lies of the past? Do you see paths of glory don't last? Our hearts are aflame. Bloody death is no game. Do you hear? We are scarred to the core. How are we to ever find peace when hunger for weapons won't cease?
Now for something completely different.